A podcast of the cinema.
Hosted by you, Alonzo Duralde. You are the rap man. Also the what the flicker. Also the who shot yous.
Fine, I'll take it.
Yeah.
And you're Dave White, who writes for the rap and anywhere else he pleases.
Sometimes I write for the rap.
Yeah, well, but you do.
You do it all the time. I do it sometimes.
Okay, but it's a thing that happens.
Like recently.
Yes.
I wrote about an Italian film.
Asiambra, that's
yeah.
true. And
soon I will write about a French film.
Also, The Third God's Not Dead.
Also, The Third God's Not Dead, yes.
Which I really can't wait for. Well, anyway, but so yes, us, you know.
Don't hold your breath on how
good
that'll be.
We're film critics and we're married to each other. And yeah, and we're very excited today to have guests from one of our favorite podcasts.
Yes.
We've both been on it separately.
Yes.
But now we have them here together. So please welcome from the All Things Cozy podcast, Matt and Jillian are here.
Hi.
Hi.
Yay.
I can't tell you how amazing it is to be here right now because I am a devoted Linoleum Knife listener.
Hi.
And to be in this space and to know where Dave goes off to when you pause and pick up something out of the stove is
we're destroying all the magic, I'm sure.
Just don't turn your back. Just don't turn your head and look into that kitchen right now because this sink is piled with dirty dishes from dinner I made last night.
Well, this is wonderfully cozy.
Yeah,
we are very impressed.
Oh, good.
As hosts of a cozy podcast, this couldn't be more perfect.
Fresh cookies, candle burning.
We tried to up our cozy game.
We're going to review a candle at the end.
Oh, my God, really?
As a crossover shout out to you guys, we're reviewing
what
the
a
candle.
Lovely surprise.
Yeah. If y'all
are not listening to All Things Cozy, you are missing one of the best and most fun new podcasts out there. Y'all
oh,
want
thank
to?
You.
Oh, thank you.
How do you describe it for newbies?
Take it away, Jillian.
I always defer to Jillian when it comes to plugging our Facebook page and Instagram and the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Jillian could speak best to maybe who we are.
Well, I mean, as the name implies, it's about everything that's cozy, snuggly, just makes you feel warm inside. So it's great to listen to when on a nice cold day, when you're snuggling up in your bed or just feeling like you're having a bad day. I feel like our podcast is kind of an antidote to kind of all the craziness that's going on in the world right now.
It's the zeitgeistiest show out there. Because God knows we all need it. Now, Matt, you had done After Smash, which
that's
I'm
right.
a huge fan of.
Oh, thank you.
How was All Things Cozy born?
It was born out of I don't know, after a year off of doing a podcast, I just sort of missed it. That was part of it. And so I wanted to get back in the game, the podcasting game. It's so rewarding, you know, to do a show for free and have people criticize you. Really great. But yeah, so, and also then thinking about what did I want to see that I wasn't out there? And it felt like everything online, especially in the social media space, was really negative and critical. And I wanted to make a show that wasn't. So the show is, you know, we talk about cozy locations, cozy celebrities that call us. That's getting harder and harder to do as
I
the
know,
weeks go on.
It but really is. We need to get a Google Doc of all of this.
Yeah.
That you've already done, right?
Yeah.
Cozy mysteries, you know.
A lot of cozy mysteries. And we're discovering the show as we make it. It's kind of changing as we go. We started to kind of settle into like a book of the month thing, kind of like a book club vibe.
Oh, nice.
So you can read along with us and we'll talk about the book. And
oh, please. When this show started, Dave was like, it should never be longer than 20 minutes. And that went out
that
the window.
Like
pretty
I cannot believe
hour,
that.
An hour and 20 minutes.
I would love to. Is there an episode that short?
Way back.
Very early.
Wow.
Very
early like episodes. Our review of, you know, 127 hours.
30 maybe. Minutes. We were done.
Yeah. Whenever I see a 20 minute podcast on iTunes, I'm like,
why
did
should
they
I bother with you?
Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Where's the effort?
Was this during your lunch break?
So we had you guys on this week because we thought it would be fun to talk about cozy movies. You know, where our two interests meet. And, you know, Dave certainly will never miss a Maggie Smith joint. So, you know, he knows from cozy.
Right. No, yes, that's true. I think a lot about your podcast.
Aww,
like, I think about it a lot. And the reason I do is because what you just said, Alonzo, that they are the zeitgeistiest podcast going right now. And it, because the reason I think about it a lot is because everywhere I turn,
it's the worst.
Not only is it the worst, but there is always some new study out about, because you guys are both young. You're both under 30 or around 30? How old are you?
I'm 31.
You're 28.
Okay, yeah. Not everywhere I turn, there is some article, some study having been done about y'all. And not just the fact that you're destroying Applebee's and Diamonds and homeownership, but...
You're welcome.
But yes, thank you.
They but, named Matt and Jillian specifically.
Yes. But that people in the generation called the millennials have extreme anxiety in general. Like, these, like apparently, y'all are the most anxious generation that's ever been in the history of the universe. Yeah.
And why shouldn't you be?
Yeah.
And I think about how it makes perfect sense that a podcast about comfort and safety and coziness would be the cultural output of young people. I mean, because we're old as hell, you know. And we've we've absorbed all the anxiety and just carried around.
We're tired
in
old
our fat cells now. Yeah, but so I love the idea of working that out in a podcast way. And sharing that feeling of well-being with other people. You're doing a public service.
Oh, come on.
Yes.
No.
Oh, yes.
It's so funny that you say we're zeitgeisty because we talk about 30-year-old books on our podcast.
But I just think, right now everything is so terrible all the time. And I feel constantly tense when I watch the news, when I just looking at Twitter and finding out, oh, this politician said this thing or this awful incident occurred or whatever, you know. You know, I think it's one thing for people to sort of escape into just like, you know, Star Wars or whatever the hell, but...
Yeah, I don't mean a retreat from reality. I mean...
But you guys are you're applying a balm to a tense nation. You know, that's what I think you're doing. And
the nation thanks you.
Yeah, because you guys started like in what, early 2017, right?
July?
I think mid 2017, June.
Right. So, you know, that man had been around long enough to where like, as soon as I heard, I'm just excited that Matt had a new show. But then when I heard what it was about, I was like... and every 2 weeks it's just this, it's this moment of like, yes, let's pull up the caftan, and you know,
that's really kind of you to say. I mean, a lot of it too is just when you look at social media and what's being out there culturally, not only do you have the onslaught of the news and all that brings, but then a lot of the cultural commentary on top of that, it often is also negative, right?
True, right.
Like even when I see a lot of shows that are tackling media or movies, the currency is to take it down. Like, how can we take these people to task? And
again,
sometimes they need to be, but also, you know, maybe we could support the things that we like.
Well, yeah, again, Star Wars, you know, there's that, somebody said, like, nobody hates Star Wars like a Star Wars fan.
It's true, yeah.
You know, there's so much about it. A new thing happens, and it's like, how long until somebody just
right,
you know, and finds a thing to complain about. And obviously, we're film critics, so we do that for a living to an extent.
Yeah, but there's a kind and supportive and productive way to do that. And then there's the scoring points off of things just to kind of have a hot take and get some retweets.
And everyone thinks they have a hot take.
Yeah.
Usually they don't.
We don't have hot takes on our podcast.
No, yeah,
it's all
I'm not
cold,
a hot
cold
kind
takes.
Of person.
They're very warm.
It's warm takes.
They won't burn your tongue.
Yeah.
They have reached room temperature.
Okay, so... cozy movies.
Yes.
Now, we Alonzo and I have been talking about this subject for a while because we feel, I don't know what you guys think about this, but we feel like there are sort of different kinds of cozy movies. There are films that are aesthetically cozy. Things like the Paddington movies. Things like gentle vintage British dramas that are, you know, period.
Or not like the Ealing comedies of the 1950s.
Not necessarily, yeah. Not necessarily like the Merchant Ivory stuff, because there's often a lot of very sort of difficult social critique going on in those. I'm talking about things like I Know Where I'm Going, which was vintage because it was made in the 1940s. Or contemporary films like, as you just said, Maggie Smith.
Ladies in
Ladies
Lavender.
In Lavender. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's about Maggie Smith and Judi Dench as little old ladies on the coast of England.
During World War II.
I haven't seen that, and I feel like I've been living my life wrong. I don't know what happened.
There's a Maggie Smith-shaped hole in your heart, trust me.
So, and then there are the films that just make you feel good and comforted, and they don't necessarily have to have a cozy aesthetic about them. We were discussing specifically one that we both really love. We will watch Gentlemen Prefer Blondes in a heartbeat, with no provocation.
Like, if we're flipping channels and it's on, like, boom, everything stops.
The world stops, and we watch Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Because it is so funny and weirdly sweet, even though it's about two women who are kind of mercenary about finding a man. And I have a stage-managing sort of ritual where if I'm watching Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, I would prefer it be somewhere around Christmas time so that I'm probably already in my pajamas with a blanket and a cup of tea and something nice to eat and or an enormous bowl of pasta in front of me on the couch. So for me, that's a cozy movie.
Yeah, like a movie like What's Up, Doc? Or Singing in the Rain. There's not a, you know, knitted throw in any of them, but they're cozy in that they make me feel good, and they're escapism, and I know I'm going to enjoy it. Then it's a comforting experience, as opposed to, like we were saying, you know, Ordinary People. The emotions are very difficult and complicated,
but the sweaters are so good.
Yeah, like all the trappings of that movie are steeped in cozy.
There's nothing like a good old money preppy house in a film, like in Ordinary People.
Or the Royal Tenenbaum.
Where you think, well, these people are screwed up, but I'm going to move in.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, so when I was thinking about what cozy movies are out there, how do you define a cozy movie? It's really subjective, right?
Totally.
I felt like all the movies I picked fell into two camps. One was they're around Christmas time, so there's it's all by association. Either it was related to a holiday, because I find Halloween and Christmas really cozy,
right?
Or they were related to my childhood, and so watching that movie reminded me of being young, and that made me feel comforted.
Yeah, that's how I am. I think with my cozy movies definitely relates back to my childhood and nostalgia, and just remembering a certain time of my life, as opposed to like, oh, the aesthetic of the movie, that really doesn't play any role, except maybe in a setting. Like, I love movies that take place in Seattle or during the winter or the fall.
Or like a nice autumn.
Yeah, I love a good autumn.
We were also talking about that earlier, where if it doesn't matter what the action is in the film, it could be grueling unpleasantry. But
or a murder mystery.
If it's raining outside or snowing outside, like I was saying to him, you know what? Agnes of God is a cozy movie because it's very snowy outside. But everything's terrible on the inside.
But as long as there's a roaring hearth, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I feel about the Lord of the Rings movies, because the Lord of the Rings movies are intensely cozy for me. I don't think anything would be intensely cozy. But even though you have ghosts with swords chasing after hobbits, it's still it's the setting, right? It's these beautiful outdoor scenes, the coziness of those hobbit holes. I just want to live in a hobbit hole. That's all I want in life.
It opens with the hobbit homes.
Right.
And the entire rest of that 47-hour saga is about the desire
to get back to that hobbit hole.
And so,
and have a second breakfast.
There's that, yes. There's that, which is also inherently cozy. Second breakfast. Those movies aren't about orcs. They're about wanting to go home.
Right.
And then they get to. So yeah, completely. I totally agree with you. He hates them, so ignore him because everything he says about them is wrong.
I don't look to hate them. I would have to have seen them all, but I bailed after the first one. I saw the first Lord of the Rings movie, and I was like, this is like watching somebody else play D&D. I was out. It didn't do it for me, and so I never went back. And I've never watched Game of Thrones. I just don't.
Not cozy.
No, no.
Game of Thrones, not cozy. That's not cozy. Full of death and assaults.
And no breakfast.
And no breakfast.
But in particular, the Fellowship of the Ring is the cozy entry. Because the other two movies, there are too many battle scenes. And once the spectacle of Helm's Deep and the battle for Minas Tirith, you know, that all you get over that, they're not that interesting to rewatch.
So you're saying the Desolation of Smaug isn't cozy?
The Hobbit movies, I don't know what happened to those, but like,
are not cozy, they're crispy.
They're crispy.
Because they're 120 frames a second.
Yeah. The first time I saw that, I was ugly. Like, is this community theater? I feel like I'm at, you know, a local playhouse watching a local production of The Hobbit happening. It was too clear.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, the Hobbit, I feel like they just missed the mark on that, because the whole cozy element of that is it's a small self-contained story, and to drag it into an epic space inherently undercut the coziness. But the Fellowship of the Ring, especially the extended editions where they spend even more time in cozy places, that's perfect. And I watched those movies in high school. I had the extended editions. I lost count. I watched over 30 hours of that movie just over and over and over again.
So beyond nostalgia, though, are there other kind of trappings of coziness in terms of like, you know, like a Jane Austen sort of, you know, thing, or like Dave was saying, a preppy movie. Like, I think Whit Stillman's stuff is very cozy, like Metropolitan and, you know, Damsels in Distress, that kind of thing, because they sort of operate in this bubble of comfort and privilege in a way, you know, and so, yeah, everyone's always really nicely dressed and they're sitting on comfortable furniture and, you know.
I think the money aspect of Whit Stillman is kind of irrelevant to the subject, because those people could be rich or crazy rich even, and they would be, and if he would put them in a different environment, those films would not be, they would not fit the cozy mindset. Yeah, but his worlds are hermetically sealed, and you know
spiritually, yes,
nothing bad is really going to happen to anybody, and you can feel safe there. Same as I think Wes Anderson's.
I was about to say. The Wes Anderson movies, the aesthetic is very cozy.
Yeah.
Even insofar as they use so many miniatures, which are kind of inherently cozy, and the colors that pop, and they're very beautiful movies.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about even like the Darjeeling Limited, you don't think about India, you just think about that train car.
Right.
And that luggage.
Yeah, I feel like most movies set in a manor house, even if murder is involved, are cozy. Like, I'm thinking of Clue, right?
Sure, yeah.
Very funny and cozy, I think because of the intimate setting. Mm. Anytime a movie...
And there's a storm outside.
Yeah, anytime a movie kind of closes off the characters, you get to know people well, and it's in a setting that you feel like you have your bearings in, and that's sort of enclosed, I think that often turns into a cozy movie.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes it was challenging thinking of cozy movies, because I feel like television might be an inherently cozier medium. You kind of see the same people week after week
in the same sets,
and there's a level of comfort that you develop as a result. But movies, they really have to work with the setting to create a cozy atmosphere.
Well, you know, with that exact description of the whole house and being kind of closed off, I can't defend this movie, but I do occasionally find myself watching it. I think mainly for the cozy factor is Peter's Friends.
What is that?
A Kenneth Branagh movie.
I do agree with you.
It's about a group of old
early 90s movie.
It's about a group of old college friends who had like a theatrical review getting together for a reunion. And so Kenneth Branagh plays, you know, he's now like, he was the once promising director who's now doing like crappy movies, starring his comedian wife, who's played by Rita Rudner. Emma Thompson is in it as like the, you know, spinster book editor. Stephen Fry is their host, who is gay. Hugh Laurie and Imelda Staunton have become like popular commercial jingle writers, but they're dealing with the tragedy because they lost one of their children. Mm-hmm. I forget who else is in it, but they're all in Peter's sort of familial estate for New Year's, and old skeletons are dug up and new romances possibly occur and yada yada. It's nothing much of a movie, but it is cozy AF.
The British really have the corner on cozy. They've cornered cozy. I think we can say that comfortably.
Because it always rains there. Yeah. They kind of had to invent cozy from whole cloth, you know.
Paddington now is just the coziest enterprise. Like, the whole franchise is extremely cozy. I couldn't believe even watching, because I'm late to Paddington, and I haven't seen the second one.
Oh, man.
I know. But that first one, I watched on Netflix, because it's on Netflix now, and I was just blown away at how calming that movie was.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
It really is. It will lower your heart rate.
Yeah.
I'll see two again with you if you want.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, please. We'll eat marmalade out. Sandwiches.
And I will weep again.
He cries,
so you know.
At Paddington, too, so be ready for that.
I also feel like movies that have a natural element, I think nature's inherently cozy too. We kind of touched on that with like snowy atmosphere. Okay, you know what? You know, some of those fur outfits kind of looked cozy.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm teasing.
You know, the forts after all of the bloody battles looked comparatively cozy.
No, like nature films, like what?
Well, I think of Prancer, but that's also a Christmas association.
Oh, well, yeah.
And it's that kind of small town, you know, back to basics vibe. Where the snowy atmosphere, the simplistic lifestyle of just sort of worrying about a reindeer, you know, a reindeer's in my house. Like, that's just very cozy to me.
No, actually, you're right. There is a whole thing of sort of small town movies, and again, on TV, Gilmore Girls really tapped into that sort of desire to live in a small town that is not peopled by like crazy paranoid militia, Bible thumpers, but, you know, interesting eccentrics who will help you out when you need it and that kind of thing. Right. And so, yeah, a good small town movie with like a nice quirky cast of characters, super cozy.
Yeah.
Jillian, you had a cozy pick I hadn't heard of before.
Oh, yeah, this is kind of random, but Tadpole? Guys, familiar with it?
I don't know. Tell me, what's that?
I was stumped too. So, can you explain Tadpole?
Wait! It was Sigourney Weaver?
Yes, and John Ritter's in it.
Gosh, what year was that?
I think it's 2001.
I have completely forgotten about that film.
Yeah, it's a really random. It's a really kind of a random pick, but I like it because it takes place in fall in New York and going back to the setting.
Yep.
Fall in the city is so beautiful and gorgeous. And it's just like a sweet movie about a kid in boarding school who comes back to the city for Thanksgiving break, which is also cozy, so you throw in Thanksgiving there, and he kind of has a little bit of a flirtation with his father's friend, and so that's not really a cozy plot, but it's just like a really sweet coming of age story, and I think I find it so cozy simply because they have such great shots of fall in New York.
Autumn is, I think, the coziest of the movie seasons. Well, I mean, winter, obviously, sure, with Christmas and stuff. But like I think of a movie like The Big Chill, or just any movie where people are walking through or like leaves that need to be raked. You know, that's especially living here, we don't have that. You know? I keep meaning to, every autumn, I'm like, oh, we need to go spend a weekend in Northern California or something, just so I can see some leaves turn color. And then we're never too busy.
Well, if you can't, you can always turn on the Hallmark Channel, because they have their fall harvest movies.
Oh, this is true. Now, let's talk about season porn, because you coined this phrase, and I think it's genius.
I'm really trying to make it happen.
I'm signed on.
So, the idea of season porn for me is, when watching Hallmark movies, they do seasonal movies. There's no reason these movies have to exist, except that they provide season porn, and that they just have characters, you know, shuffling through leaves, or they even have spring season porn. I guess they're, plucking tulips.
Lots
I don't know
orchards,
what they do in those movies.
Apples.
It's the same romantic comedy setup. It's the same plot of any other sort of Hallmark movie.
Right.
It's just that the setting...
But there's a pumpkin patch and some cider, right?
And that's what you want in that season, especially when you live in Los Angeles and you don't have access to that. Mm. I needed it really badly this year, so I watched all of the Hallmark Fall Harvest movies.
There's a lot.
Yeah, there were plenty. And I would just kind of rate them based on how well they did the mise-en-scene of Fall.
No, no, and, I love those reviews, and the hayrides played a key role, as I yes, recall.
The best ones had hayrides, no question.
and then, I mean, like, all the Christmas movies are winter porn, basically.
Right.
Even though most of them have, like, the fakiest snow imaginable. Yeah. And people clearly sweltering in a wolf scarf.
The weirdest thing about a lot of the Christmas movies is they find the emptiest homes sometimes to set them in. Mm. They're these cavernous McMansions where they've somehow somebody, maybe it's a producer's home that they've like kind of camped in for the weekend or something, but
it's
are
where the
soulless.
Single mom lives somehow. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's sort of weird because you'd think you'd want a cozier, tighter space, and yet a lot of these common living areas in these Hallmark movies are gigantic.
Well, but they need the room to put that Balsam Hill tree in that eventually is going
to
show up.
Yeah. Oh, good point. Yeah, that it is brought to you by a Balsam Hill tree.
With a close-up of the logo on the bag when they're unpacking it, which means they had to undo all of their movies about how artificial trees are so soulless, you know. I've got to save the Christmas tree farm, you know.
Right.
Anyway, we digress. But no, I went on your show to talk about Christmas movies, and yeah, I agree. Like, there is something in most of the best Christmas movies are cozy, either because they're about family or about, you know, bundling up against the winter. Mm. Or, I mean, like White Christmas is an entire movie about people waiting for it to snow.
Yeah.
But it's also cozy because it's about people taking care of each other.
Yeah. Which is the same thing that happens in It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, totally.
There
yeah.
are so many parallels between those two films.
Yeah, but there is actual snow in Bedford Falls.
Yes.
I don't know. I like it in White Christmas when they're driving around a set in a Jeep.
Yeah.
There was something cozy about that. It harkened back to a time when you could just drive a vehicle around a closed set and everyone would just buy it.
No, it's true. There is something about the artificiality of old movies, whether it's they're obviously on a soundstage or the New York skyline out the apartment window is just obviously a matte painting. Yeah, the there is something that just kind of feels like, oh, that's, you know, that's sweet.
So, what are your picks? What are your favorite?
Yes, they brought yes. Matt and Jillian brought a top 10 list for us to knife.
Okay, so I'm slightly terrified because I've always wanted to get knifed.
Oh my
God. But never in person.
Yeah, well, I've been listening for a long time and I hear you guys knife lists. I hear you guys knife lists here. And so we brought an all things cozy approved top 10 coziest movies. And of course, I mean, this is
it's
very
difficult.
Subjective. It's yeah. very hard.
Naturally.
A lot yeah. of this is, you
is this
know,
a collaboration?
It was a collaboration.
Yeah, collaboration.
Okay. It's from our podcast to yours.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And so let's see how, I guess, knifey this list is.
Are you ready to be ruthless?
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, let us have it.
Here.
All right. Number one, Mrs. Doubtfire.
I love Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah. Super cozy.
It's the only movie I have purchased on Amazon, like the digital copy, because I just want to be able to have it.
Wherever you go.
You know, if a plane crashes and I'm stuck on an island, I can still pull it up. They have Wi-Fi, I guess.
So I want to be clear that Mrs. Doubtfire is not a good movie.
No.
But it is a film I love.
Yeah. And it is a, I can imagine it being an even more comforting movie if you saw it like when you were 11. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
But even having seen it as an adult, I get the vibe there.
Yeah, I saw it when I was 28, and I still dug it. Yeah.
Number two, Bridget Jones's Diary.
I like it.
Very cozy.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Although we have it to blame for the ugly sweater phenomenon, I think.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yes, so, ugly yeah. and annoying, but cozy.
Yeah. Very, it's that's true.
You must admit.
Anything sweater-related is automatically
And it
cozy.
Makes me, when I see it, I wish for good things for Renee Zellweger.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't want the acting world to chew her up and spit her out. I want her to be okay.
I think she's doing okay.
Yeah.
As long as she doesn't make any more Bridget Jones's movies. That last one was...
The last one was not great.
I love the last one.
You know
one.
What? It was still a nice Bridget
I
Jones.
I cried at the end of...
Bridget Jones' Baby?
Well,
yes.
We saw it together, wow. didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It made me really emotional. It's just what I needed. I think it was a raw time. Like, when that movie opened, I think things were pretty bad, and I just needed... I needed some Bridget Jones in my life. Number three is Love Actually.
Oh, well.
Again, not a good movie.
Indefensible,
yet,
but we love it.
Yeah, I'm into it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's on the sweater train with Bridget Jones.
Totally.
Also and, the British train.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know what's wrong with it, but I watch it every year, so.
I'm gonna. There's one that's next I'm going to save for the end.
okay.
Too hot for TV.
But on the topic of British movies, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Okay.
The first one.
Yeah. The first one.
I'm trying to think if that's as cozy as some of the later ones, but yes.
I think it's cozier because the world is smaller.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Hogwarts is better lit. There are a lot more torches.
Yes.
Hmm.
The torches kind of went away later in the series. There was more natural lighting.
It is a warmer looking Harry Potter.
Right.
Film. Yeah. Okay.
And I think because of its sense of refuge
mm-hmm.
for this boy who needs a place.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I can't say that I've watched it a second time.
Yeah,
I saw it when it came out and never watched it again, but I understand.
The thing I notice about like the generational difference between when I listen to y'all's podcast or any podcast by anybody who's about y'all's age is how much of a cultural touchstone all things Harry Potter are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, I miss a good quarter to third of the references. I'm like, I guess that was a thing.
We participated in it.
As like I read all the books once, and I saw all the movies once. You know,
you couldn't avoid it whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah, I'm not saying, oh, what's this Harry Potter thing? I don't refer to it. It doesn't become. It's not my go-to metaphor for things.
Right.
Which I think for a lot of people it is.
It's. I'm glad that it exists in the world because there are so many other far more terrible things that could have taken its place. So, you know, thumbs up to Harry Potter.
Yeah, it was very important for me. I would spend many nights crying about characters that died and while listening to my Dido album.
Oh, Dido.
important in my middle school years.
Hey, we're not even going to go into your cozy music episode.
Oh, you guys disagree?
When was the cozy music episode?
It's one of the recent ones.
It's the new one? I haven't listened to that one.
No, yeah, well, it's the most recent.
The new one just dropped. Oh, yeah. It's the A is for Alibi, but the previous one was
I'm behind. Yeah. Because the last one I've listened to was the one where I was yelling at you guys in the car because you couldn't remember the name of Happy Endings.
I'll never forget it now.
Yeah. And so, I haven't gotten to the cozy music episode yet.
There's a lot of Dido in it.
I'm sure. Well, then I'll be yelling at you again.
in ecstasy, right? Dido's You'll be so queen. Happy.
Wait, here's the thing. Cozy music, not necessarily my jam.
Huh.
Like, I like...
That's true. Dave likes harsh and...
Harsh... Brutal kind of stuff.
Oh, didn't see that coming.
Quite a bit. That's really kind of my thing. Now, there is cozy music that I like.
Sure.
I talked about Sam Phillips on your podcast. She's as cozy as they come.
Yes.
Singer-songwriter, you know, people who are working in a very intimate way. Iron and Wine, old Judy Sill records from the 70s. I'm into that kind of stuff, but it's not... My first go-to?
Yeah.
I like a lot of what is classified as easy listening. So, like, you know, your
Herb... Which is pretty cozy.
Your Herb mm-hmm. Alperts, your, yeah. you know, Lena Horne's, your, you know, Esquivel's, that kind of thing.
All right, now I can't wait to also listen cozy. To the music episode.
Anyway, we digress. All right. Continue with the list.
I'm going to let Jillian read this one because she's so obsessed with this movie.
Oh, Father of the Bride. I'm obsessed. Nope. God.
No. Oh, we have our first fail.
Nope. You have
to I'm gonna stand strong with Julian on that one. Here's, I think Father of the Bride is very cozy.
Tell us why, because that's what we want to
hear. Okay, well, Steve Martin I just find inherently cozy. He's one of my cozy celebrities I've mentioned on the show numerous times.
She's working her way through the entire cast of Father of the Bride.
Yeah, I pretty much named the whole cast.
She just did Martin Short.
Even though it's set in California, it still has a super cozy vibe in the setting of that big white house. Yeah. And they always have these shots that features just the outside driving down these leafy streets. And I don't know, it's just
and
a feel-good movie.
The kitchen I resent.
Wow.
You resent the kitchen?
I am simultaneously attracted to and resentful of...
The Nancy Myers kitchen?
The Nancy Myers kitchen, which is... I don't know what meant if Nancy Myers had anything to do.
She co-directed this.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I'd forgotten that she was even involved.
It's her and her then husband.
But the Nancy Myers kitchen is a source of pleasure and disdain. Because I see that kitchen, and then I think of my tiny little like disintegrating kitchen, and I think, y'all don't even appreciate your kitchen.
Seems a bit personal.
So mad.
They don't seem to use it much.
Have you seen the original Father of the Bride? Just curious.
No.
Okay. Just fine.
I haven't.
All right. Continue. Sell us on Father of the Bride.
Well, it also has that, you know, feel good vibe. I can't go wrong with their father daughter relationship. It's really sweet. And then you have some humor thrown in with Franck and. It's just overall, I can't, every time I watch it, which I've watched it a lot, I can't get enough.
Kimberly Williams.
Yeah, she's super cozy. Was a cozy
ingenue.
She probably still is on the Hallmark Channel, I'm imagining. She well, seems like the kind who would be.
Does she still work, or does she just...
She's Kimberly Williams Paisley now.
Does she just hang out being Paisley? She's
in the country world now.
She pops up in things.
Does she?
Okay. And then George Newbern, who is like a walking Lorna Doone, that guy. Like, he's just so, like, featureless. But, you know, I don't know.
Oh, God.
I mean, you were, what, 12 when Father of the Bride came out? Which is prime time for that kind of movie, because it feels like it's kind of grown up.
Yeah,
and
I feel the
90s. Yeah.
A walking Lorna Doone.
Okay.
Keep going. All right. What's next on the list?
All right. Next is Home Alone.
I like Home Alone.
And there's... The cozy factor is high with this one, for sure. Yes.
A lot of our movies have well-appointed suburban homes.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a common thread.
Well, you know what? Fran Lebowitz, of all people, once said that the best place to live is a suburban ranch-style home because everything is soft and comfortable there. Now, this is a woman who has spent her entire life in Manhattan smoking with...
disdain.
Andy Warhol and a bad attitude, and Dolly Parton somewhere off to the side. They are friends.
Yes.
Which is also hilarious to think about. But she, yeah. Of all the spiky urban people in the world, Fran Lebowitz has extolled the virtues of the suburban home. And she's right. They're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I would disagree on the topic of the ranch.
Yeah, I can't. I've got to agree.
Having grown up in a suburban ranch home,
not big on the ranch.
I've fetishized staircases my entire life.
Oh, okay, yes.
And give me a two-story.
The staircase in Home Alone, it's a 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And it's almost a character in the film.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a good point.
Now, I get what you mean about the staircase situation.
Mm-hmm.
The two-story house feels full and stately, kind of, but not snooty.
Right.
Just I grew
warm,
up in a two-story
just
house.
Warm and good. Yeah.
And there's a place to hide. Like, you can kind of go up to your bedroom and
right.
slam your door and right. say, go away, Mom. And,
it's not
you know.
Just down the hall.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, my parents' bedroom was right next to my bedroom, you know? There's
not
barely
very,
any
not
privacy.
Very cozy.
Right.
Next is, I'll let Jillian read this one.
Oh. Matilda.
I like Matilda as well.
I never liked Matilda. I love Roald Dahl, and I like a lot of Roald Dahl movies, but I just thought Matilda was too much.
And Matilda has the added bonus of starring Mara Wilson, who grew up to be really cool.
No,
yeah.
She's great. I got to interview her once.
Oh,
she,
really?
Yeah. We Frank DeCaro and I were doing this annual Christmas thing with Outfest, because we each have books that are sort of about pop culture and Christmas. And so we would have guests come in who were involved in sort of well-known holiday films. And she Skyped in to talk about A Miracle on 34th Street. And she was hilarious. And her Twitter feed is brilliant.
She's
I love Mara
smart.
Wilson.
Yeah.
I just don't love Matilda.
Oh.
So what do you like about Matilda?
So Miss Honey is very comforting.
Oh, yeah. And heard that the house that Miss Honey lives in, or she's trying to reclaim in the movie, is super cozy, I think.
Yep.
That big
Trunchbull is not so cozy. But throwing a girl by her pigtails, kind of cozy.
If you say so.
Yeah, sweet movie. Even though school is a little bit scary, I still think it's beautiful.
There are
grounds.
Scary elements, but it ends up in a cozy place.
It does.
And
very sweet.
Yeah, it's for a Roald Dahl inspired movie on the cozier end, I would say.
And the emphasis on books, how much she loves.
Yes,
so like
absolutely.
A little
yes.
bookworm.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Next,
Aristocats.
Ooh.
Into it.
Trey cozy.
Very into it.
Awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, we were discussing that when we were debating it. And we're like,
also, the most psychedelic of all the Disney animated features.
Oh, I don't know. There's the Pink Elephants on Parade number in Dumbo.
Okay, yes, there is Pink Elephants on Parade in Dumbo, and then there is a lot of Fantasia that's trippy.
And Alice in Wonderland.
But do you remember the sequence in the Aristocats where they actually sing the song, Everybody Wants to Be a Cat?
Oh, I love that.
And then the colors go wild, like you're in a discotheque with like go-go dancers, and all the cats are turning purple and pink and blue and yellow and orange.
I need to see it again.
It's been bonkers.
A while.
Yeah, I love it.
It's quite the number.
Yeah.
Listen, a cat's playing a trumpet. It doesn't get cozier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those cats are playing musical instruments.
No, I no argument on the cozy front, for sure.
Yeah, so just noticing trends, our list has a lot of suburban homes, cats, and movies about books.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, number 9 is You've Got Mail.
Oh.
Let me tell you.
Here's the thing.
Go on.
Shop Around the Corner is one of my favorite movies ever. And that's what this movie is a remake of. And even at the... I mean, like, I wonder if now it's sort of quaint in a, oh, the 1996 internet, you know?
Right.
But even at the time, I just remember thinking, like, this is such a labored remake where they're trying to fit this story into a chat room and it just doesn't go. And then the other thing that's kind of ruined it for me over the years is Dave White's impersonation of Meg Ryan typing, which he's about to show you.
That's true. I'll give you that.
Because she's putting her face in it and turning her head. Like, you can see all the thoughts going through it. And
right.
Yes.
You're just selling the movie harder for me.
I mean, look, there's bookstores and there's super nice New York apartments, and Nora Ephron is a close cousin of Nancy Myers when it comes to, like, living
right.
spaces.
Well, how cozy is it, too? Like, even the conflict of this big box store coming in, right, that is like the Barnes & Noble borders.
To close down my children's bookstore.
I love that Meg Ryan squelch you put in that.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I don't like the movie, but I will grant you that it is super cozy.
I think Tom Hanks is
cozy. I agree with...
And Tom Hanks is...
They're typing
cozy.
Out of bed. They're in their bed on the computer. What's cozy? We're that's... When we all are cozy, we're doing
that.
I'm
going to half agree with you on this one because it has a very cozy aesthetic.
Yes. Coffee shops.
However, here's why I hated it. On site in the 90s when we went to see it at the United Artists 8-plex.
Yes,
right off the freeway. Yeah. It tasks the audience with feeling sympathetic toward an evildoer. That's Tom Hanks. And I'm not down for that on any level. And
also, he should have wound up with Parker Posey and not Meg Ryan.
Indeed.
Because everyone should wind up with Parker Posey
was the reason I went to see the movie. Yeah. But no, I give you this. It has a very cozy aesthetic.
Yeah.
But I cannot get with this romance because he's a bad man. And it's hard because the movie is selling you hard on him not being a bad man. But he's a bad man. Because he's running roughshod over the New York City that people
are
want
you,
to
Are
keep.
You comforted to know that Amazon will eventually arrive and then...
And put him out of his
business.
Destroy
yeah.
him? No. I am not.
Someone even worse.
I'm just saying, in the grand scheme of things.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
He's only medium bad.
His time is coming.
Okay.
All right.
Last but not least. Oh, God. I know you have feelings about this movie. And I'm here to hash it out.
Oh, boy.
Is this a Yankee,
Yankee Candle,
Candle
the movie?
You know what? It might be for you guys. For the attitude you've taken about it.
Yes.
Number 10 on our cozy movies list is Hocus Pocus.
I've never seen it, so I cannot judge.
I
just don't want to.
And I want to say the context in which I saw the film makes me understand why it's on the list. Back in Dallas in the early 90s, I was a volunteer at AIDS Services of Dallas. Each Saturday, my job as a volunteer was to take all the children who lived there mm-hmm. to the movies, because their parents had AIDS and the kids were living with the parents in this residential facility that was part apartment building, part hospice. Mm-hmm. So, because this was the early 90s, when it was pretty much guaranteed that you were going to die. Now, thankfully, mid-90s, along came better drugs, and I'm just hoping that the kids who I took to the movies every Saturday still have parents who are alive and well. But at that time, my job was to take the kids out of the parents' hair for an afternoon, drive them in the big 18-seater van to the big town dollar theater, and see a movie. We saw Hocus Pocus.
Dave saw like every G and PG rated movie
Rich,
that yeah. year.
Rich. Like, you name it, I was there. All the... Three Ninjas.
It sounds like we had the same summer that year.
Yes. Yes. But I was chaperoning someone your age at that time. Yeah. So the... It's a bad film. Hocus Pocus is a bad film, but I understand the cuteness of it and the sweetness of it and the idea of three friendly bumbling witches having a whatever the hell they did. I don't even remember.
They're
the
kind
plot.
Of menacing.
Yeah,
they're a little
they
scary.
They scared me when I was younger.
Right, but ultimately they were sweet. And so the...
Well, they're funny.
Yeah, exactly. And kids love... Kids don't mind... I don't think kids mind menacing as long as it's funny and slapstickish.
Right.
Which is what they were.
As long as they know they're ultimately harmless.
So I can actually... I can let this completely... pass through the gate.
Wow.
Without a problem.
It's autumnal.
Because, yeah, yep. Because you've got some films on this list that are straight up terrible.
That's the thing about cozy movies is they're not always the best movies.
They don't have sure, to. A cozy movie doesn't have to be good. It only has to make you feel good. And that's a whole different qualifying.
Believe me, like watch Peter's Friends. You'll probably agree. It's not good, but it's super cozy.
Can we please watch Hocus Pocus together sometime this fall talk about it?
Okay. Yes.
And really have a deep conversation because I think it's actually a very good movie. It's very entertaining. It's well written, and I watch it every year, and I never get bored.
Well, wasn't it Matt told me that it came out in July, which. Is that true?
Or? Yeah, it's bad marketing.
Yeah. So it's kind of surprising. I think that's partly why maybe it didn't do so well.
So we have, what do we have here?
I wouldn't accept that challenge for most, but for you guys, I'll do it.
Thank you.
Based on my notations here, this list is 80% knife.
I can live with that.
Well, all right.
Great.
It's a B.
Because you and I disagree on two, so that's a half.
Yeah.
And then we both agree that Father of the Bride is stupid.
Yeah, so. We nickeled and dimed our way to 80%.
Sorry for telling the team that.
So moving on to the week's new movies, y'all saw Game Night.
Oh, wait,
which...
I don't get to give you my list?
Oh, you have a list?
Oh, I got a list.
Oh, golly. Okay.
Well, here are my cozy movies.
We'll get to Game Night in
a
second.
Why don't you have a list? You're the co-host of this show.
I thought we were going to have a general conversation.
Oh,
I didn't know lists were going to be part of it.
I made a list for myself because I have feelings and thoughts.
Well, that's why
hopes, dreams,
I have been mentioning films along the way.
I have a lot of needs of coziness.
The films that
why
I've been talking...
Why do you think I listen to this podcast?
The films that I've been talking about along the way are my list.
Mm-hmm. So, as I mentioned, I know where I'm going.
Totally.
What year?
1945, I think. Oh, it's
if
so good.
If y'all haven't seen it, it's so great.
Wendy Hiller, who did you see the original Murder on the Orient Express?
No.
Okay. Well, anyway, she's a British actress. She plays this woman who is bound and determined to marry this rich Scottish guy who she doesn't necessarily love, but she's all about, you know, just like improving herself. But she can't get to his island off the coast of Scotland because the fog is so thick. And so she gets stuck in this small town and winds up falling in love with like the local, you know,
the
laird or whatever.
The guy who has the boat.
Yeah, Roger Livesey is like, they have an amazing romance. It's great.
I love, as I said, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. The original Parent Trap with Hayley Mills.
Mm. Although I'll go for either Parent Trap because that's again Nancy Meyers.
The original Parent Trap with Hayley Mills, however, is the one that I used to watch with babysitters as a child.
Okay.
Because it was always on. Somehow it was always on the NBC Saturday Night Movie. And if I knew my parents or my father back when I was just living with my father after the divorce, if I knew they were going out and it was babysitter night, I'd be like, "Hope the Parent Trap is on." 84 Charing Cross Road.
Oh.
This is a film from the 80s.
Bookstore.
Anne Bancroft and Anthony Hopkins. She is an American... It's a true story, too. She's an American writer who develops a correspondence friendship with a British bookseller. And she orders difficult-to-find books from him. And they become...
And she sends them, like, treats from America, like things that they can't... Because it's Britain after the war, and everything's rationed and stuff. And this close friendship develops between her and, like, all the people that work at this bookstore. And the whole movie is sort of set as this correspondence. And Anne Bancroft is the American lady, and Anthony Hopkins is the bookseller, and it's lovely.
It's lovely, yeah. I like The Sound of Music. He does not.
Wow.
You know, you'd think I would, and I love a musical, but there's that movie just really chaps.
My mom's going to be very disappointed to you, with you when she listens to this.
A lot of people love it, and I don't begrudge them that, but I don't know. It's not my jam.
Babette's Feast.
Oh, God.
About the Danish.
Yeah, yeah. Two Danish spinster sisters take in a French émigré who becomes their maid for years. And then when the maid wins the lottery, she wants to thank them by preparing them this feast. And it turns out that she used to be like this great chef in France, and they had no idea. And the sisters are like part of this really sort of strict religious sect, and so they're very distrustful of like pleasures. Like all they ever eat is like beer, bread, and fish.
Yeah, they're not allowed to have food pleasure. And she spends all of her lottery winnings on the ingredients for an extravagant, luxurious meal that she cooks for them.
Food movies are very cozy.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, I would almost be tempted to put Julia and Julia on a cozy list, but there's the Julie part of that, which ruins it. But
I'm not anti-Julie. Like, I know there's a YouTube edit that's just the Julia parts.
Right.
But, like, I'm okay with Julie, too. I think, right. You know.
Amy Adams is sweet and good, and Julia Child was a homophobe. So there you go.
And a high school friend of mine who now works at Le Creuset sent me a French oven after I talked about it.
Yeah, we got a Dutch oven.
On the
internet. For free. It just showed up at the house one day. Those things cost a lot of money.
No, I said on Facebook how the Le Creuset was super on point in Julie and Juliet, not even knowing that I knew somebody that worked there.
Wow.
And next thing I know, I'm getting a French oven in the mail. It was great.
Wow, we have a long way to go in our podcast. To.
This is why we Upper make sure to include product placement surreptitiously in every episode.
I sure need a Balsam Hill tree. Right? Yeah. Finally, I had one.
I talked about Ladies in Lavender earlier with Maggie Smith and Judi Dench. I love Crooklyn for the same reasons. It is a really warm family comedy. It is also heartbreaking, but it still delivers that feeling of well-being.
I showed Crooklyn to my grad students that I was teaching at Chapman, and we get to the last like 15 minutes, and I was like, "Yep, I had to go outside because I knew what was coming, and I knew I was just going to be like a blubbering mess."
I talked about on Pop Rocket recently the queer film Big Eden. Which was
very
from
cozy.
The early 2000s. It's about a man who leaves New York City to go. This is literally the template of a Hallmark film, although it's better. he goes to his hometown in
Montana.
Wyoming. Montana?
Montana.
Wyoming. Okay. And he kind of develops this sort of tentative relationship with a very quiet, very shy Native American guy. And everybody in the town, everybody in this tiny little town...
Even though the guys never come out of the closet, they all figure it out.
...is a Gilmore Girls-ish busybody. And everyone, including all the old rednecks, they conspire to get these two guys together. And it's this beautiful fantasy of what would it be like if you had never had to leave your small town because everyone wanted you dead? Mm. What if everyone wanted you to be in love instead? And that's what it's about.
That's wonderful. I need to see that.
It's great. It's from the guy who would go on to direct Family Stone, but don't hold that against it.
I love Autumn Tale from Eric Rohmer, French film.
The title alone is cozy.
Yeah.
And I love My Night at Maud's from Eric Rohmer, which is a Christmas film.
It is.
In fact,
it's in my book.
And I love pretty much all the films of Arnaud Desplechin, this other French director, for the same reasons, because his France is as close to the Wes Anderson kind of, like, lived-in environment.
And A Christmas Tale falls in that category of what we were saying about Merchant Ivory, and that, like, the emotions are complicated, but the settings are very cozy. Mm-hmm.
And my problematic faves are Hannah and Her Sisters.
I was going to say, at some point I felt like we needed to mention that Woody Allen, for all the Woody Allen-ness of them, a lot of his films are super cozy.
And Four Weddings and a Funeral, which I will never forgive for making, even though I love it, I will never forgive this film for making its queer characters...
Have the funeral.
Not have the funeral. I don't mind the funeral. I mind the obliviousness of every other character in the film not knowing that those people were gay. And I blame the movie for letting that happen.
I give that a pass.
If they were such good friends, they would know.
I give it a pass because those characters are such navel gazers, though.
But they're tight. This group of friends is tight in this movie, and that there's no excuse for that kind of reticence on the part of Richard Curtis.
But but
he also cut a lesbian storyline out of Love Actually.
I know.
So he is a problem.
But here's the thing, though.
He created the Vicar of Dibley, so
step back, Dave White.
He is a saint, in fact.
Right. But here's the thing, also. I think a character who is the age of the Simon Callow character in 1994 may well have been the kind of person who, even with his closest friends, operated in a sort of DL zone, where he maybe didn't feel comfortable bringing it up, or just assumed other people knew, or, you know, I think you're applying Dave White in 1994 standards to a character who's older and British and has different circumstances.
Listen, Cool Britannia, be as cool as your viewers. How about that?
But yeah, Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Catch me outside.
Real cozy.
That's the end of my list.
Okay, now
it's 100%.
It goes without saying.
Now can we talk about game nights?
Speaking of cozy miniatures, you guys caught that? Did you
catch the miniatures? No, they were beautiful.
So cool.
The opening credits, you mean, or
the whole film? Every time there was a parking lot or a car driving or people standing like from a distance, it was a little diorama. It was like a little miniature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you not notice
that? I don't think I noticed this.
I can't even give this part away because it ties in with a thing that you learn later in the movie.
Okay.
Where were you?
I have to watch it again then, I guess. I was just enchanted by the writing and the acting.
I'm not going to spoil that for the listeners.
But it did give us wonderful Beetlejuice vibes. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. I totally missed this.
It's pretty seamless, so it's easy to miss, and it almost looks like a camera trick because it is so sharp and they transition it so well. But yeah, they were miniatures going into the cutscene.
That's hilarious.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get
all the wide shots of like a city and people driving and miniatures and models and stuff.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Explain the theme. Explain the plot of this film.
Okay, so Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams are a couple, and they're a couple brought together by their love of games and their competitive nature, and they host a game night for friends every week, and they want to have a baby, but they have been failing so far, and the doctor surmises that it might have something to do with the fact that Jason Bateman has always felt outdone by his older brother, who's played by... Kyle Chandler, and Chandler comes to visit, and
come on. It's Kyle Chandler.
Yeah, well,
of course you're going to feel inferior to Kyle Chandler.
Indeed,
he's so handsome.
I love him. He's one of my cozy celebrities.
He is a cozy celebrity. So he comes breezing into town. He takes over game night, and he's like, "All right, we're going to do this thing where there's going to be a kidnapping, and you're not going to know what's real, what's fake, and you have to follow the clues, and blah blah blah." And then these two guys show up and kidnap Kyle Chandler, but unbeknownst to everybody else, they're not the people he hired. Like, they're actual kidnappers.
Right.
So these other three teams, it's McAdams and Bateman, and then. Billy Magnuson and Sharon Horgan, and he's an idiot, and she is the co-worker that he brought along because he figured that she was British and that makes her smart, even though she's Irish. And then Kylie Bunbury and Lamorne Morris as sort of high school sweethearts who got married.
From Pitch.
She was the pro baseball player on Pitch.
Okay.
And he was on New Girl.
Right.
And they've been together since high school, but then over the course of the evening, it comes out that she once slept with a celebrity, so he's dying to know who. And they amble into this thing at first thinking that it's all fake, but then they discover that it's actually real, and it gets successively crazier. And this is the kind of movie that could have fallen apart in a million different ways and somehow never does.
Right.
And it feels structured and written in a way that I like because I'm so annoyed with... movies where like Will Ferrell or whatever is just making it up as they go along. This one actually feels like jokes are set up and jokes are paid off and characters matter and the plot makes sense. And I thought this movie was just a delight.
What'd y'all think?
I laughed consistently.
Yeah,
generally laughed. And I also loved Rachel McAdams in it. I thought that she was great in it.
Really appealing.
Yeah.
And funny.
And true, if she felt like a person I know.
A real person.
Yeah. Mm,
yes. Yeah.
Very genuine.
I think of her like that quite often. Mm-hmm. I think that in the right film, given the opportunity to be as good as she can be, she'll be as good as she is in this film.
Yeah, she shines in this movie, I thought.
And our friend Michael Cyril Creighton pops up for about 10 seconds at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
He's the guy in the glasses. When she and Jason Bateman meet and they're like on opposing teams at a bar trivia night, and she's saying, "This isn't a game." And Michael says, "That's literally what this is."
Cool.
And my understanding is that he was kind of supposed to be her date for those first times, and then that's why he's so angry when they finally get like engaged.
Oh, funny. Okay.
Oh, I mean,
that's
why, missed that.
Yeah,
that's
I missed
how,
that
that's
too.
Kind of how it played, because if you notice, he exits the film at that point.
Yes.
Like, he does not stay a part of their game night,
right.
Which suggests to me, because, you know, we know this guy, so we're thinking a lot about whether we're going to see him again in the movie. And he disappears.
He disappeared.
Because it seems like he was sort of thinking of her
he
as his
thrown
date.
Over.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, and I didn't even mention.
Even though he's as gay as a goose.
I did not mention Jesse Plemons as their neighbor. His ex-wife used to be part of the game night circle, and now he wants to be in the game night circle, and they're constantly having to pretend like they're not doing it to avoid him because he is such a weirdo. And it is an inspired weirdo performance.
It's wonderful, and he holds his white fluffy dog like a Bond villain.
Yes.
If we were last summer talking about Tiffany Haddish
totally
as a best supporting actress possibility, I would love it if, though, even though this is February,
if we remember
if
Jesse
we could
Plemons.
Remember Jesse Plemons in this film at the end of the year, because this supporting performance is straight up brilliance.
Yeah,
it is as weird and deadpan and uncomfortable as I have seen a human being be in a film.
It's like Anton Chigurh played for laughs.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Anyway.
What impressed me about this movie was it had setups that I usually would never find funny. Like, there was a lot of gross out humor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of violence.
The bullet scene, removing.
Right.
Yeah, and yet it worked. Like, the way they set it up and shot it, I laughed.
Yeah,
it
like,
just worked for me.
I think of an R-rated comedy that gets violent, there's that tipping point where it's not funny anymore, or where it's too much played for laughs, and so the violence don't have stakes, and they really just, like, divide it very well.
The one tropey thing that it did that annoyed me was when you have characters in immediate danger, and then they use that opportunity to have a witty back and forth off to the side while they're about to be shot or something. It's like, you don't have time to talk. Stop this. That I don't like. But they didn't do it too often.
I think the whole movie just was really relatable to me. Because, I mean, I think everyone can relate to getting competitive at a game night. Or
we used to have a game night.
Or, yeah, go to a game night. And it's kind of, it was neat.
And there's a time you got kidnapped and then I had to rescue you.
So extremely relatable. I've been through it all.
That's why we chose this one, because we were like, we only had time to see one movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so we picked game night because we used to have one. It fell apart, though, because all of our friends moved to New York.
Yeah, but it, as they do. But it was, I love all the twists and turns. Sometimes it was like hard to keep up with all the twists.
Right.
But
well, I apparently missed the whole production design element, so yeah.
You gotta go see it again.
I'm gonna.
Currently, I
want to do
it. Staring
anyway.
Hard at Alonzo Duran.
Yes, he is.
Because
Dave won't play board games.
I will not play board games with him anymore.
Oh.
Now, we have a lot of friends who will come over and play board games, and we have a lot of board games. But when Alonzo Duran plays a board game, you better look out. Because he becomes a killer. Like a psychotic killer.
Wow.
You're overstating the case.
No, I am not. There is a look on his face during a board game. And the look is, I'm going to win. I'm going to win. And win he shall. By all any means necessary.
Look, I came in second on Jeopardy. So
he doesn't cheat, but he's ruthlessly competitive.
It's true. Like, I don't do sports at all, but, you know, put me down like with Monopoly or Uno or something, and
Clue.
The killer instinct all comes
it's
out.
It's only with board games? It's not with charades or something?
Oh, yeah, charades and celebrity.
Celebrity.
And
we
get in trouble at celebrity because Dave and I like to put, like, you know, forgotten 60s French film starlets in, and everybody gets angry at
they
us.
They count as a celebrity.
Yes.
In France.
Francoise d'Orléac was huge, and she was Catherine Deneuve's late sister. So we'll put her in.
So board games, yes. Role-playing games, no. No D&D.
I played a little D&D in junior high, and it just was too much. It was between the dice and the
you have to have a good dungeon master.
Charts and all the stuff and the little pewter figures and everything. It was just like, I can't.
I'm just learning now because I'm a high school English teacher, and my students enlisted me to host their D&D club.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I'm learning it from a bunch of 15-year-olds, which I feel like is probably,
I was going to say, that,
the best
who knows better,
from,
yeah.
Right?
Like, I've never played Settlers of Catan, which I know is a thing, but nothing that has like a million little tiny pieces of cardboard, you know?
Yeah, some of those board games, you just have to, I have an issue too where I need to be focused on it. I can't casually have conversation while I'm playing a game. I'm way too focused on the game, and I get really annoyed when it's somebody's turn and they're just having a good old time talking about something else.
Having a chin wag. Yeah.
Right. No, we're playing this game, we're focused.
That's right. It's your roll the dice!
I will play Scrabble with Alonzo Duralde. That is the game I will play. Because it's just him and me. And we make the game last about 2 weeks.
Wow.
Put it out on the table.
It on the table, and as we have time during the day, we'll stop, we'll make a word, and then we'll say, your turn.
Wow.
And then it goes until it's over, but it'll take days to make it go, because we're playing this game.
This is my nightmare.
In passing. Yeah.
No, we're finishing that game tonight.
I like a leisurely pace. One where I can dip in and dip out. Yeah. But so anyway, this movie is delightful.
And I was surprised because, you know, I generally avoid trailers. I somehow kept seeing this one and I really enjoyed it. But then I found out that it was directed by John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein.
People responsible for things we hate.
Yes. Like, they wrote Horrible Bosses. They wrote The incredible Burt Wonderstone. And they directed the Vacation reboot.
I haven't seen any of those.
All of which I hated.
Well, you're lucky.
However, they did also write Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh.
Which was good. And so, like, I think they're getting
some mojo. They contain multitudes.
Now. Yeah, exactly. I can no longer make assumptions. The guy who wrote it did a comedy that I thought was pretty funny called Accepted with Justin Long and Jonah Hill about these people who don't get into the college of their choice, so they sort of make one up. But, like, before that, he wrote Herbie Fully Loaded and The Country Bears.
Mixed bag.
Totally. But this is such a well-structured screenplay, and the characters are so funny, and I love Billy Magnuson. Like, Billy Magnuson being adult, like, in Damsels in Distress and in Into the Woods.
Oh, he's so good in Into the Woods.
Yeah. You know, and Dave and I used to always call him Butters when he was on As the World Turns, which I was watching because of the whole the Luke and Noah storyline. That was a big groundbreaking gay couple on soaps, and he was just sort of like the random cute straight guy.
Random hot blonde.
I don't even remember what his story was, but anyway. So whenever I see him now, I think, oh yeah, soaps.
So thumbs up for all this one.
Oh, no question.
Yeah. Surprisingly.
Yeah.
I didn't
know what to expect.
Yeah.
But good.
Oh, good.
Well, we saw Annihilation this morning.
Yes.
It stars Natalie Portman. It's from Alex Garland.
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. And The Beach, right? Was he?
He wrote The Beach. He wrote 28 Days Later and something else.
And 28 Days Later. That's good. Yeah. It stars Natalie Portman as a biologist at Johns Hopkins who finds herself whisked off to a secret location by government forces. This happens after her husband, Oscar Isaac, has returned from being in the military after she thought he was dead. And when he comes back, he's a completely different person. And then he says, I don't feel so well. And he starts to, like...
Bleed out.
Ambulance comes, takes him away. She's in the ambulance with him. And that is when the secret government forces take the ambulance over, take them both out, and take them to the secret facility. At the secret facility, Natalie Portman learns that there is a thing, a threat, a biological threat that is poised to overtake nature.
And no one can quite figure it out.
What it is.
It sort of landed in the middle of this swamp on like a lighthouse, and it's been slowly expanding outwards, and they call it the Shimmer. And it's sort of like, you know when people blow those big soap bubbles and the exterior is all sort of like that swirly prism of colors? Mm-hmm. It's that. And
super elastic bubble plastic.
Exactly. And they've sent all these teams in, and no one has ever come out except for Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
And so they're sending a new team in that's led by a psychologist played by Jennifer Jason Leigh that also includes Tessa Thompson and Gina Rodriguez and Nuva Tuvatni.
Tuva Novotny, who I don't know. Should I?
I'm not sure that I know who she is either.
All right.
And so Natalie Portman joins them to try and figure out what's going on in there. Can we stop it? And that's all we're going to tell you.
I just looked her up. She's Swedish. She was in the TV show Nobel.
Okay.
She was in A War.
Oh, okay. I forgot.
She has been in a lot of Swedish
stuff,
films and television. She was in Eat, Pray, Love.
Okay.
I don't remember her in that. So, you know.
So this movie is very, it's kind of a rival-ish, and it gets into almost like a little 2001 territory.
Like
a
rival, yeah.
It is heady sci-fi.
It is science fiction, and it is, gorgeously mysterious.
Yeah.
And beautifully depressing. And freaky. And gory. And I don't want to tell you details.
Yeah.
Because things happen when they go into the Shimmer. Not good things.
Right.
Mm.
It is in keeping, I think, with the whole Alex Garland
ethos.
Guide to life, in which fear of what's happening to the world around us becomes the premise for human beings having to find their way through that threat. So in Ex Machina, you have the threat of artificial intelligence. In 28 Days Later, you have the threat of
zombies.
You know, well, yeah. But zombies are the result of, you know, viruses,
right,
that have mutated and taken over, which is always sort of like a thing that routinely comes up in the culture every time a new bird flu is announced.
Right.
Where people say, oh yeah, this is the one that's going to kill
it. It's the super strain
on Earth,
you know, because we all use too much hand sanitizer.
The beach is an environmental drama, if I'm remembering properly.
Sort of, yeah.
And this is very much an environmental drama about what happens when nature stops functioning in the way we want it to function. And,
like at one point,
survives without us.
At one point, somebody, like the movie is sort of bracketed by this interrogation and is saying, like, you know, it's destroying everything. And she says, no, it's not destroying things. It's just changing them.
It might destroy all of us.
Yeah. We may not like what those changes are, but it's you know, that's two different things.
So it's beautiful to look at.
Yes.
Gorgeous production design.
You have all these
murky.
Yeah, like it when they're inside the Shimmer, like it's always kind of gloomy, but there's always these sort of shafts of rainbow that appear because they're inside this space where there's this whole sort of prismatic thing happening, and they have to sort of throw in this kind of like mutated, first flora and then later fauna as just kind of a matter of course. So people will be walking past trees, but that have these weird sort of like molds or just odd flowers in weird colors, you know, and they look organic. They look like something that grew, and not
things
just,
that look like they're growing psychedelic gardens.
Yeah, it's not like the, you know, the chocolate room in Willy Wonka, you know, where all the mushrooms are clearly like fake. Like, this looks like actual plant life, but this just does not exist on this earth, you know.
It is simultaneously about fear and anxiety, about grief, about the possibility of, as Jeff Goldblum says in Jurassic Park, life finds a way. It might not be the life you want, but life's going to find a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, loss and guilt and a lot of things.
Paranoia. It's a lot to take in one sitting. And ultimately, probably a bummer. But it's so gorgeous and so so extravagantly kind of realized, and the performances are wonderful. It's all women.
Yeah, the squad they sit in, it's all women, and so it's like it's the Bechdel testiest movie, you know, in many a moon.
It's probably going to make 3 cents. I know it's got a C.
Cinema score, yeah.
Which always means that it's good.
Yeah, an F especially.
Cinema scores are like the inverse of what's true. Like, if it's got a C, a D, or an F, that means dummies hate it. And I'm sorry if you hate this movie. I called you a dummy. I didn't mean to do that. I apologize. But not really. And
like Mother famously got an F. And yeah. It was just like, well, it's because the opening night crowd didn't get exactly what they expected. And so they're like,
I think audacity is often punished.
Oh, yeah.
In mainstream filmmaking. Solaris. This is mainstream filmmaking, but it's interesting mainstream filmmaking.
Yeah, no, it, for like a studio sci-fi movie, it's cerebral and challenging. And, you know, like the Alien movies get to be moody and sort of flirt with ideas because there's a monster in it, you know. And this one, there's less of that and more thinking. And then we also saw Francois Ozon's Double Lover, which is just kind of cuckoo bananas, but fun.
Would you like me to talk about what
Please
it
do.
Is?
Please do.
Okay, so Chloe, this is based on a Joyce Carol Oates novel.
Yes.
Francois Ozon adapted it.
Even the credits say loosely adapted.
Yeah, I haven't read this book, but I can't imagine.
Yeah, I'm sure it's... Yeah.
Chloe, played by Maureen Vacht, who...
was in Ozon's Young and Beautiful.
The minute I saw her, I said to myself, you were once or perhaps currently a model. She has that everything that models have. That sort of blank.
All the edges.
All that blank face, but that gorgeous blank face.
Like a Hallmark movie.
Yeah. Yes. Well, no. That's a different kind of blank face. And Jeremy Renier.
Yes. Not Jeremy Renner.
Not Jeremy Renner.
You guys were seeing a fan.
Jeremy Renier.
I'm glad you differentiated, because yeah. I was imagining Jeremy Renner with a little mustache.
That's what I was...
Jeremy Renier, who is, if you've seen any of the Dardenne Brothers films, he's been in them since he was a teenager.
And he was in Ozon's Potiche.
Yes. She is a young woman who seeks the help of a psychiatrist, played by Jeremy Renier. They fall in love, so he has to stop being her psychiatrist. And when she stops seeing a psychiatrist, everything in her life turns into a nightmare. Because she comes to understand that perhaps her husband...
Her shrink-turned-boyfriend...
might not be telling her everything about himself. That, in fact, he may have a twin...
who is also a therapist.
Oh, a double lover?
For instance.
And possibly also an evil... He might be an evil twin. And she might wind up getting sexed on both of them. Mm. Only the evil one... Well, the things they do together... Oh. Are pretty crazy. This film has pegging.
It does.
And... but in a crazy way, like when you're watching it, you're thinking, okay, gay director. I get what you're doing here. you're letting these straight people do this thing the way they think it should be done, which is not good. Not a good, no, bad pegging in this movie. And if you don't know what pegging is, you can go Google it. But don't Google it with your kids around if you don't want them to know about these sorts of adult things.
This movie also includes a female climax filmed from inside?
Kind of, yeah. It is what is known as a psychosexual thriller. It is maybe the dumbest, silliest thing that I've seen in a long, long time.
It doesn't hold up to a second of scrutiny once it's over, but the ride is entertaining.
However, yes, I mean, it is, when I say dumb and silly, I mean also possibly quite offensive to some people who would wind up maybe watching it.
You think?
Yes, because it, well, I can't say why without giving away the ending, but there's a twist, obviously, because this is a psychosexual thriller. And you have to learn, you know, who are the double lovers? Who are the twins? Are there twins? Where are the twins? What's the deal with the art in that gallery? Why does it look so weird? Will we see it later? Maybe.
And how does Jacqueline Bisset fit into all of this?
Yes. Yeah. Why is Jacqueline Bisset in this movie? How many people is Jacqueline Bisset? Is she twins too? All of these ridiculous and nonsensical and pointless questions are answered by the end of Double Lover. Again, not a good film, but oh, does it look great?
Yes.
So much beautiful, sleek, rich people apartments in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Great furniture. Double furniture all the time.
Yeah, right? Two great therapist offices.
Two great therapist offices. Two beautiful, really expensive chairs facing each other. A home that's beautifully symmetrical that you go into, and then you walk up the stairs, and there are two beautifully symmetrical doors at the top of the stairs. Like, it is a perfectly designed, twinsy kind of movie. Not nearly as cool or radical or deranged as Dead Ringers, the Cronenberg film from the late 80s.
But if you like Dead Ringers with its twins and body horror, you'll get elements of that
here. If you love Dead Ringers, you will think of this as the carob version of that chocolate.
Is Dead Ringers the sequel, like the way that Aliens is the sequel to Alien?
No. There's Dead Ringer with Betty Davis and Dead Ringers with Jeremy Irons, but they are not sequels.
I just thought maybe they would like triple the twin count, and now there's like so many twins.
So beautiful production design, beautiful people, all naked all the time, totally boning constantly.
Although, again, gay director, how come no boners?
Well,
how come no full frontal from Jeremy Renier for that?
Here's why this is happening. Jeremy Renier's contract said this. I guarantee you.
He is the film star now.
He's a big star.
I guess
he is a big star.
Is it no boner clause?
Over there, he's a big star. Because
bad enough, no boners in the 50 Shades movies.
In the past, Ozone has really gone there with male nudity and sex. Yes. But, you know, those were with
Rising young stars,
young Jeremy Renier, or young actors who don't care,
right?
And the reason you see Maureen Vacht completely buck naked in this movie is because she's a model and she's used to being naked in public constantly. Yeah. So she's like yeah, sure, I don't care. Yawn. I don't care, but he did. And I don't know that what I'm saying is true. I just know it's true.
No, you probably are. But it just, we had a conversation about 50 Shades Freed on who shot you. And it's just like, it just drives me nuts. That like, that we're in 2018 and there's still this bugaboo about male nudity in movies, you know, whereas like women are expected to like show more and somehow like the bathing suit area is still like this ultimate taboo.
Yeah.
Super fans of French filmmaking. We'll notice Miriam Boyer, the old lady neighbor.
The cat lady.
Who is the cat lady. She was in Chantal Ackerman's Golden 80s.
Ooh.
As one of the mall people.
The mall musical.
Yeah. Before we finish up, I want to say thank you to Daniel.
Oh, yes, Daniel at the Arc Light.
I was half asleep when I walked up to get my ticket torn this morning. And he was like, hey, guys. And I was like, who are you? And then I saw the name tag and I was like, Daniel. Do I know you? I do know you. We've met, yes. But by the time that all sorted out in my head,
we were halfway to the theater.
And so I was like, it had been several months since I had seen him at the theater. And so, first of all, sorry for being a complete, like, dummy lummox when I was greeting you this morning. Also, Daniel, you did a very fine job of introducing
the film. Yes, you did. I can't imagine it's any fun to come introduce a movie at 9 o'clock in the morning at the ArcLight to an audience of 10. But, you know, you sold it. You really made us believe that you would be, or someone like dressed like you, would be standing in the hallway if we had any problem with temperature or projection or sound. So, no, thank you for listening to the show. We appreciate your, you always say, hey, when we're at the ArcLight, it's always good to see you. So, always good to see Matt and Jillian and to hear them. Where can people find y'all online?
Yes, we are at All Things Cozy Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. We even have a Facebook group for all of our cozies. That's what we call our listeners, cozies. We have names for our listeners.
Yeah.
Cosettes.
Cosettes.
Oh, I like that. I might have to try that out.
Yeah. We haven't settled on one
it
yet.
It makes me think about Les Mis, which is not a good
one. All right.
I like cozies, though.
So like we have a Facebook
group. Like
I've
got a beer around me, you know.
But yeah, we're on iTunes. Check us out. And I may as well. This is the first podcast that's ever had me on as a guest. 3 years in podcasting. It took long enough. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you. You guys are so nice to us.
Fans, so we're happy that you're here.
And y'all are both on Twitter.
Yes. I'm at Pivo Varchek, phonetically spelled.
What were you thinking?
Well,
it was not taken.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I can't. You know what it does? It helps people actually pronounce my last name.
Well, there is that.
There you go.
I have a very Polish last name. Yeah. The W's are pronounced like V's. There's a consonant train wreck at the end.
Yeah.
And so I thought spelling it out phonetically might help people say my name.
I call Mr. P.
Let me see if I can get this. It's at P-E-E-V-O-V-A-R-C-H-E-K.
C-H-E-C-K.
E-C-K, okay.
Yes, like check, please.
Now I know what you were thinking.
There will be a link in the show notes.
Yes, so you can follow me on Twitter there.
And Jillian?
I believe it's my first name, Jillian with a G, and Walters without vowels.
Okay.
Also complicated.
Our handles are puzzles for you.
Wow.
It's an acrostic.
Have fun. And also if you are, since I'm here... Yeah. Also, want to plug my old podcast. Why not?
Sure.
I never had the chance while it was on.
Yes.
I had a podcast with Lewis Peitzman from BuzzFeed where we watched every episode of NBC's best worst musical drama, Smash. Rest in peace, Smash. We love Smash.
People on streets.
And that's exactly. And that's called After Smash, and that's still on iTunes. We're still hosting it, so you know.
And seriously, even if you didn't watch Smash, it's a hilarious show, and because Matt had never seen the show before, he can sort of be your guide through if you know, to explain what it all is. If you don't feel like you have to go back and watch Smash, although I mean there is some entertainment to be found there.
I'm overdue for a rewatch,
but definitely go back and listen to After Smash. You won't be sorry.
Yes, and All Things Cozy.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. This was wonderful. It's a dream come true.
Well, the same for us. So, hey, y'all, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more. You can support this show and get more content from us by joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yep.
We offer LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics, and other stuff and cool prizes and all kinds of things. Also, we just put out a new Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode where we spend an entire running time of a film talking about a film. You can make that a commentary or not, but we just did 2012's The Avengers with our friends Johnny Jungle Guts and visual effects producer Tom Ford. You can order that one a la carte without having to join the Patreon. You can just PayPal us $1.99 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and we'll send it right to you.
Also, I was your substitute teacher this week.
That's right.
Who shot you?
You were indeed.
You were off talking to Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, I was.
Being fancy.
Oh my God.
I know.
That's so exciting.
And I went on Who Shot You with the Who Shot Yous.
Yes.
To be you. And we talked about Black Panther.
Correct.
And I went to see Black Panther again just because I was going to be on that show. I knew somehow that seeing it one time at night on a school night was not going to give me everything I needed to get. Because you know me, after 6 o'clock at night, if I've had dinner, I got dinner in my belly. You know what I want? I want to be in my pajamas on the couch. I do not want to be at a nighttime screening. And so here I am at the Arclight, at the All Media, not falling asleep, but definitely nearing bedtime. And I knew I wasn't catching everything I needed to catch. So I went back Wednesday morning last week, bright and early, like 10 a.m. I paid for my ticket like I threatened not to. I threatened not to the last time.
And that movie really needed every ticket sold because, you know, they've really been struggling at the box office.
I know, but I was talking all big about I'm going to go see Black Panther again and I'm not going to buy my ticket. I'm going to give my money to Paddington 2, but I ended up buying a ticket to Black Panther. I was trying to be all tough with Disney, but I was not.
You're a cream puff, we all know.
I got to say, second time Black Panther? Oh, God. Even like I walked out of it the first time thinking that was really good. And I walked out of it the second time thinking, oh no, that was great. Like it is a great movie. There's so much more resonant the second time and so many more details that I picked up and lines of dialogue that hit deeper. Yeah. And
it's a rich movie,
a
for sure.
Wonderful film. So do go see it. It's even if you don't think you want to see a Marvel movie, here's the one that I think you want to see.
Yeah, and it's so disconnected from the other ones that you can walk in having seen none of them and it won't matter.
Yeah, it only gets connected during the credits where they tease things to you.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. All right, well, y'all, go subscribe to All Things Cozy. Matt and Jillian, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Such a treat for us. And we will catch you guys next time. So until then.
Goodbye.